It is with tremendous gratitude to the Bayer Olam and to all of our friends around the world who are spreading the good word that we begin B'Seiyata Dishmaya, Think Positive and Work Class, number one, part one. And lovely to see you all on the line. I see we already have old friends and new friends joining together on the line here today, and that's always so exciting. It's always so much fun to have past participants joining together with new participants, and everybody gets the benefit of new questions and old questions and all the fun of the fair. Be'ezras Hashem Yisparach. Long time ago in one of the classes, I was talking about Rav Volbi, who describes tziurim, the inner scenarios that we all carry with us, that we all view the world and experience our lives through the prism of our own inner scenarios, which means that we all have certain preconceptions of what certain things mean, and then we experience our lives based on those preconceptions. So women in the group wanted to know, okay, let's see if this is true, you know, about like an everyday kind of a thing. And one of the women suggested, let's just see how everybody here in this room feels about something very ordinary, like curtains, she said. I said, that's a good idea. So let's try and see. So I started with one woman. I said, so what do you think about curtains? Oh, she started to say, curtains for me is just Siyata Dishmaya, she said, when I was just newly married, I wanted one day when my husband had gone out of town, I wanted to put up curtains that day and surprise him for when he came home. And she lived in Eretz Yisrael. She said, I went down into Yerushalayim and I went to a number of different stores and nobody had, or they didn't have what I wanted. And finally, I got to one last store at the very end of Meir Sharim, and I asked the man there if he would please be able to make me curtains. And he left all of the other people in the store. He just came over to me, and he helped me, and he told me, yes, and I'll even come and hang them in your home for me. And he hung them up in my room, and before my husband came home, those curtains were there. And she finished off by saying, curtains for me is a symbol of Hashem's love and Hashkacha Pratis. She ended with a smile. The lady sitting next to us, I invited her to speak up. So what do you think about curtains? Oh, she said with a very sour face, curtains for me is a symbol of everything that I would love to do that I will never get done. You know, like you could just say it a million times and nothing will ever happen. That's what I think about curtains. Curtains sums up all the times I try to get things done. Yeah, like putting up curtains. Sure, we're going to have curtains. Like, it's like that dream that will never come true. She ended, looking very bitter and frustrated. Okay, in the meantime, another lady is changing colors at the other side of the room. I said, are you feeling okay? She said, oh, please, please don't talk about curtains, she said. When I was expecting one time, I threw up in a curtain store, and I just can't even bear to think about curtains. So at that point, we were all rolling in laughter because just with these three women, already there was such a variety of tziurim, a variety of inner preconceived perceptions, just talking about curtains. Now, my father should live and be well till 120 years. He grew up with my grandfather and many of their generation. They were material manufacturers. They manufactured material. My father and many of his cousins opened up curtain stores. And so for us, getting new curtains was like a beautiful part of life. We grew up with bales of material constantly coming in and out of the door. And the wrapping paper that accompanied it was always a great excitement. So for me, curtains had a tremendously positive, evocative power in my memory. But it was so interesting to see that all of these four women, and we didn't even really go much further, but just to understand that the variety and the depth of feeling that was attached to something so prosaic as curtains was really utterly surprising to all of us as we were sitting there. And if we think that that's the kind of reaction that women can have when thinking about curtains, which really has very little impact on our lives on a day-to-day basis, then how much more so do women have an inner preconception when it comes to marriage, when it comes to mothering, when it comes to money and also words that don't begin with M, you know, when it comes to basically anything in our lives, we have a preconceived perception. When it comes to food, when it comes to relationships, when it comes to what friendship means, when it comes to sisterhood, we all have so many different inner preconceptions. And they color our thinking, but they also color our experience. And of course, all of these four women, when it came to curtains, they would have a different experience just walking into a curtain shop because of those preconceptions. So the question is, can we rewire ourselves? Once we have a preconception like that, does that mean we're stuck for it for life? Does that mean that that's it? Curtains? And the answer is no, we're not stuck for life. Not only are we not stuck for life, but recent science, and I'm talking about in the last 5 to 10 years, has come up with a totally different conception of actually how our brains work. It used to be thought that you were given a brain and basically it had the potential that it had, and it was kind of all downhill from there. Like, you know, either it deteriorates, but you have the brain that you have. But now that's all changed. Our understanding of what the brain can do and how the brain changes and evolves is just deepening our awe for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creation. In the area of science called neuroplasticity, which discusses the changes that take place in the brain as we think, they've come up with new understandings that actually the brain is constantly being generated, new changes are being generated, new connections are being created in the brain. They're called neuropathways. And so what we described with this curtain is a neuropathway. The woman who threw up in a curtain store, she made a connection in her brain that when she began to think of curtains, she began to feel nauseous. That was due to a mental connection that had been made inside her brain, a physical connection. But the good news is that new physical connections are being made all the time. Every time we think something, every time we do something, every time we say something, we're making a new neuropathway in the brain. We're making a new connection for the new kind of thinking, the new kind of speech, the new kind of behavior. And even if we've been doing a certain kind of behavior for a very long time, even if we have been practicing a certain kind of belief or habitually, you know, biting our nails or whatever other kinds of habits we've been doing that we don't like, and it created what we might call in neuroscience language, in highway language, like an 8-lane highway in our brain. Like the connection is so entrenched and deep. But we can create a new pathway in our brain that is now linked to a new, different behavior, thought, or speech pattern. We can literally create a new brain for ourselves, which is going to rewire the way that we think, and therefore it will rewire our experiences. Now, of course, it's going to take a certain amount of practice. It doesn't happen overnight, but it does change. It makes an entirely new difference. And so all of this hype that you've been hearing about the transformation that can take place within women is entirely true. And women really do experience tremendous transformation. And it's actually on a physical basis. It's even within their very brains on a neuropathway level, on a cellular level. We are creating actual transformation in our brains. We're teaching ourselves how to be new people. And it's a wonderful, fantastic discovery that we can do this through listening to the classes, through different ways of thinking, and through practicing all that we're going to be sharing together. We are going to be able to rewire ourselves. So another question we might ask is, are we just changing ourselves, or are we actually going to be making a difference in our lives? So I'll tell you a couple of stories. There's a young woman who, Baruch Hashem, has taken a few times our series, Think Positive, and she's learned how to use her mind and guide it to where she wants to be. She's also learned how to help herself feel the closeness of Hashem even in challenging situations. I think by all accounts, most women who have ever experienced it, and even those who haven't, would list childbirth as one of those experiences that would definitely provoke some kind of anxiety. And so, just to let everybody know right at the very beginning, I have a free guided imagery for birth. It's called The Miracle of Your Own Birth, and it's available for everybody who's in the program and even those who are not in the program. So if you know somebody who could use a guided imagery to help them have an easier birth, then please, you can download it from the site. Just wanted to make that announcement. Okay, so she prepared herself for birth and hoping for the very best outcome. What actually happened was she was in the middle of the birth experience, and the doctors came in. There was some complication come up, and the midwives and the doctors, everybody was in a high state of alert. And she said she felt that she was surrounded by a lot of activity, but she herself was in a bubble of peace. She felt totally contained in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's arms. And even as there were things going on that could have brought her to a high state of anxiety, she felt totally calm, totally at peace. Baruch Hashem, the baby was born, B'Sha'a Tova Mutzlachas, completely healthy and fine. The emergency had passed. And she said whenever she now recalls, whenever she wants to recall a moment of feeling closeness to Hashem, of feeling Hashem's protection in her life, she recalls that moment. She recalls that moment of everybody around was very highly distraught, and she was totally calm, feeling completely at one and protected by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love. She said, if I wouldn't have had that ability, if I wouldn't have had all of the tools and this new way of thinking, she said, I certainly would have been dragged down into who knows what kind of anxiety. And I certainly would not have been able to recall this memory as a positive memory. But as it is, I can recall this memory as one of my most positive memories. Because for me, it speaks to me of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's closeness with me, that he was engaged with me, that he was protecting me. And Baruch Hashem, there was a tremendously good outcome. Another story that this just happened last week. A woman who I've been in touch with her for a couple of years, she called me, she said, I always call you about different kinds of things that are going on in my life. She said, but this time it's really, really serious. She said, my daughter was not feeling well. I thought it was a virus. I took her to the doctor. The doctor didn't like what he was seeing. He sent her to the hospital. They did some tests. They did a scan. And they found some kind of inflammation in the brain. And the doctors told me she's going to have to be on medication for her entire life to keep this inflammation in the brain under control. And this dear woman was in a very, she was a little bit anxious, I'm trying to stay positive, but I really don't know what to think. Everybody wants their child to live a long, healthy life. And here with this diagnosis, a whole life on medicine, what am I supposed to think? So we discussed for some time how to approach the challenge as a whole. And then I said to her, look, the doctors have said a whole life on medication. But we don't have to believe what the doctors say. Meaning their instruction to you right now is our instruction for Ishtadlis. That means that right now the proper thing to do is to give her the medication. That's what the doctors say that you need to do right now. But a prognosis for the future? Who says that they know what's going to be in the future? And I shared with her the story of Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer, who was he was engaged to his Rebbetzin Bela Hinder, and then he got sick with tuberculosis, which was almost always fatal in those days. And he sent her a letter allowing her to rescind on the engagement, because why would she want to spend her whole life engaged, married to a man who was very likely to die very soon, Chas v'Shalom, lo nem lo lechem. And she answered back, better a few months with you than a whole life with somebody else. She went through, they got married, and they lived a long, healthy life together. Rebbetzin Bela Hinder, she copied by hand. She wrote out all of Issa Zalman Meltzer's notes. And he lived his entire life, but he spat blood his entire life. He had tuberculosis and the signs of it his entire life, but he lived a long, extremely productive life. So I shared with her this story that just because a person has a certain diagnosis doesn't limit in any way his ability to live a long, healthy life, Bezras Hashem. So I told her, we know that Hashem is Bayreit Refuos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, creates Refuos, he creates ways to heal. It's very likely, I told her, that within a year or two, some kind of medicine or some kind of treatment will become available that will be able to reverse this condition, and she won't need to take medicine the rest of her life. So we talked together. She strengthened herself in what she had to hope for, and she created for herself a new way of thinking, a way of thinking that, Be'ez Hashem, I can be hopeful about this, that, yeah, it's going to disappear at some point in the future. I don't have to accept their diagnosis a whole life, but Be'ez Hashem, it's going to go at a certain point, and that's how we ended off. So she called me a week later. She said, Chai Hinta, you can't believe what just happened, she said. I have to tell you that if I wouldn't have had all of the tools that we've gained together over the years, I would have sunk into a deep depression, tremendous anxiety. I wouldn't have been able to think in any way anything positive at all. Even the words that you said to me wouldn't have had anywhere to lie inside my brain, because my brain would have been so frazzled from anxiety, stress, and worry and fear. But after we spoke, I did strengthen myself in hope that, yeah, who knows, Be'ez Hashem, within a year or so, this will be all reversed and it will be nothing. Well, my daughter began to actually improve. And whenever there was a slight improvement, I started to tell all my friends, keep dabbling, but she's improving. Keep dabbling, but she's improving. And after a couple of days, I said to the doctor, look, maybe it's nothing. You know, maybe it's nothing. And the doctor said to me, but look at the scan. You see this? This is what it is. You know, this is what all the medical history means. That's what it is, and that's what it is. Okay, she kept davening and telling everybody to keep davening. And after another few days, she was extremely better, so much so that the doctors agreed that they should do a new scan. And what do you know? It had disappeared entirely. So the doctors came to her and said, it was a mistake. You know, we made a mistake. They don't want to admit your Rebbeinu Shel Olam made a miracle and healed her, even though you didn't even have a minute to even hope that this would just disappear like that. So I said to her, look, we were hoping, you know, that it could just reverse itself in some time, but a Kadosh Baruch Hu is way beyond. We open up the door a little bit with some hope, with tefillah, with not getting sunk down into the old kind of neuropathways of worry and stress and anxiety and fear. And instead, she was able to move her mind to hope, and the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, and emunah in the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, and trust in the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, that he's only doing this for the good, and that this is good for us in some way. And as soon as she moved and created that newer pathway, she changed her life and the life of her daughter. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought down a miracle. Is there a source for this? What makes me say this? Yes, there's a source for this. It says in the Zohar that when a yid goes down in this world with sadness, this brings down judgment upon a person, lo aleichem v'lo aleinu. When a person goes down here with simcha, this brings down happiness from above. This brings down goodness. It brings down bounty. It brings down shefa and blessing. So when we change down here, our neuropathways in the brain, when we change the way that we think, we actually can change HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response to us. We can change our lives. When we change the way that we think, we actually can change our lives. The Nefesh HaChayim, in the beginning of chapter 3, says like this. Hashem created man and put him in charge of thousands of powers and worlds, that he should lead them according to his deeds, speech, and thought, for good or Chas v'shalom, the opposite. Meaning, we were talking here, if a person down here is sad, he brings down judgment upon himself. But when a person down here goes with happiness, with trust, with faith, with hope, then he brings down blessing. Man maintains, gives strength, holiness, and light to all of the worlds, or Chas v'shalom, destroys. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu explains the Nefesh HaChaim, has created mankind, and especially his beloved children, the Yidden, that we are actually the mechanism through which blessing comes down into the world. Or, chas v'shalom, we could become the mechanism through which blessing is withheld from coming down into the world. It's up to man's free choice whether we become a vehicle for bringing down blessing or whether, chas v'shalom, we become a vehicle for withholding blessing from the world. The Rabbeinu Yonah in Mishlei, and we'll be looking Be'ezus Hashem many times into the Rabbeinu Yonah in Mishlei, Pirek Gimel Pasuk Vav, says, Katzliach b'maiseh hahu, asher zecharta bo es Hashem, that you will have a greater measure of success in those areas of life where you remember Hashem. When you think about Hashem, that it's all in His hands, then you will have an additional measure of success. A story of Rebbe Eliashiv. A woman came to Rebbe Eliashiv with her husband and children. Her husband had been given a dread diagnosis, and even Rav Fira of Bnei Brak accompanied them. And they basically, what Rav Fira was telling Rebbe Eliashiv was, there's nothing left to do. We don't have any other options left. And so they came to ask Rebbe Eliashiv if maybe there was still something that could be done. And Rebbe Eliashiv saw what Rav Fira was showing to him and what the family spoke with him about. And he sadly shook his head and had to agree that if this was the case, then there really was surely nothing that could be done. After speaking with Rav Eliashiv, the family was ready to go out. And the mother asked if she could speak to Rav Eliashiv privately after the rest had left. And he agreed. After they had gone, she went over to Rav Eliashiv and she said to him, I understand that everything is only in Hashem's hands and that He surely is only doing this in love for us and that nothing bad comes from the Baruch Shel Olam. And I trust the Baruch Shel Olam completely in all that He does. But I just want to ask the Rav, is there anything at all that could possibly be done? Because if Chas v'Shalom, my husband passed away and there would have been something that I didn't do, then I may be guilty of not doing everything that is in my hands to do. So please, if there's something that I could still do, please let me know what that would be. Rav Eliashiv looked at this woman, and then he called in Rav Fira, and he said, I want you to get this man on a plane to America right now. I want you to do this, this, and this treatment. I want you to begin it right now. Arrange everything. Rav Fira got on the phone. He made the arrangements. They flew, and the man's life was saved. People close to Rav Eliashiv asked, What happened over here? Rav Fira gave you the information, and the Rav saw everything, and all of a sudden, and it was all very clear that there was nothing to do, and then all of a sudden, everything changed. What made everything change? Rav Eliashiv answered, I saw this woman's emunah and bitachon. I saw her belief. I saw her trust, her truth and real trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam. And I saw that that was already enough to change the judgment. When a Yid guides his mind to thoughts of emunah, to thoughts of belief in the Ribbono Shel Olam, to thoughts of trusting in the Ribbono Shel Olam, this doesn't only make a difference to ourselves. It doesn't only create a new pathway in the brain, which is all very nice, but the Maisa, so, you know, I don't sense the difference in my brain right now. It actually makes a massive difference in our lives. The Vilna Gaon said that the purpose of the giving of the Torah was so that a Yid should live in bitachon with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Chovas HaLevavos explains that the level of bitachon means the level of the depth of feeling of bitachon. Bitachon is a feeling. Bitachon is not knowing the whole Chovas HaLevavos by heart. That's knowledge. Know it today, but assimilate the information into your heart. Feel it. As we know, Rachmana Libaboy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the heart. The Beis Aaron says, our thoughts is our heart. Machshava means lev. When we talk about lev, that means the Machshava. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants our Machshavas to be upon Him. Hashem wants our thoughts to be upon Him. And when we train our mind to think thoughts that guide us to feel emunah, that guide us to feel bitachon, that guide us to feel faith and trust, then we are actually changing our lives. Not only that, but we're going to feel different. In fact, thinking thoughts that make us happy, that make us live with emunah and bitachon, are actually going to change our physiology. We're going to be able to emit hormones that are going to enhance our physical body's ability to function, rather than emitting chas v'shalom the kinds of negative hormones that create problems with our health. In fact, I was just recently speaking to a woman who has had all kinds of autoimmune problems. And she said, I understand that my high level of inner stress is actually what's preventing me from healing. She has been to so many different kinds of healing modalities. She's tried, you name it, she's tried it, and not even tried it, she's learned it. Yet she understood that because she was creating within herself stress, that she was simply unable to allow all the different healing that she was trying to affect her body. But when we can really allow ourselves to relax in a Kaddish Baruch Hu's arms, and that's not simple, it's not simple, but we can do it, then we can change our body's physiology as well. And science has already recognized this, that a person, this is incredible, but that in the new scientific world of epigenetics, what they have discovered is even a person's genetic makeup, meaning if a person has a genetic predisposition towards some kind of medical condition or other, his state of mind, his positive state of mind, or his negative state of mind will decide whether that predetermined genetic predisposition will be switched on or will be switched off. So our mind even controls our genetics. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the mind, because he wants our lev, our thoughts, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu has made it that our thoughts are some of the most powerful influences in the universe, in the cosmos. So we have to, first of all, clarify something for ourselves, which is very important to understand. Are we our thoughts then? Every single thought, any kind of bad or negative thought that goes through my mind, I'm all of a sudden creating negative forces and I'm going to be destroying and holding back things. What does this mean? No, it doesn't mean that. And right away, we're going to discuss a very fundamental difference that we have to get. The difference between a machshava and a hirhor. Rabbi Dr. Twersky explains, and again, he's at that junction between science, psychology, and Torah to help us to understand these terms, that when the Torah discusses machshava and hirhor, there is a difference. Machshava means a fleeting kind of a thought that just comes into our minds. Very often that thought could have been placed in our minds by the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara has been ingested within us from the moment when Adam and Chava ate from the Yetzer Das. And so he speaks as if he is us. One of the tools we're going to be discussing, Be'ez Hashem, at a later time, is that Rabbi Dessler says that when we hear a voice talking within us that says, I, that's the voice of the Yetzer Hara. And when we hear a voice talking within ourselves that's talking, you, this is coming from the Yetzer Tov. So this means that frequently we're hearing a voice talking within our mind, talking to us, that's actually the Yetzer Hara. So I am not my Yetzer Hara. I have to understand. No matter how many times a negative thought would come to me, if I don't buy it, it's not mine. And I want to share with you a mashal that clarifies this very much. That many years ago, I was living on the fourth floor in a building here in Beitar. And there was then a rug salesman who every now and again would schlep out to Beitar, schlep four flights of stairs up with a couple of rugs under his arm. And he would knock on the door, and as soon as I opened the door, he would come dashing in with his rugs, rolling them out on the floor. And he would say, look, look, look how beautiful this rug looks in your house. Look, it matches the decor. And he would try and convince me to buy the rug. But I would take a look at this rug, and I said to myself, you know, I don't want this rug. I actually don't want it. And it's not the colors that I like. But he says to me, but look, it's here. It's on the floor in your house. So let me ask you, ladies, if I see a rug lying on the floor in my house, does that mean it's mine? That doesn't mean it's mine. It's still his. At what point does that rug become mine? At the point where I say, you know what, I think I'll buy it. And there's an exchange of money. I make a decision to buy that rug. At that point, it's mine. But until that point, even though it's in my mind, it's not my thought. And so the Yetzer Hara is the rug salesman. He's constantly trying to try things on me as if they're mine. He plants thoughts inside my mind and he says, look what you're thinking. Look what you're thinking, you terrible person. You're just thinking bad about people all day long. You're just thinking terrible thoughts. You're such a terrible person, says the Yetzer Hara. But you know what? He's just a rug salesman. Those thoughts don't belong to me unless I buy them. So what is the equivalent of buying in the world of the mind? That is hirhur. That's the difference between machshava and hirhur. The rug that is being laid out by the rug salesman is a machshava. It's just a thought. But when I decide to sit and think about it, when I say, wow, let me think about that thought for a while. Oh, yes, I really am so jealous of her. Why does she have that wonderful, you know, family? Why does she have all that money and that gorgeous house? Why does she look so great in that dress? When I sit and think about those thoughts, then that's called hirhur. Then I've bought the rug. Then I've bought that thought. Or if I'm frightened for the future, oh, I say, what's going to be? It's so terrifying. I can't barely leave my house. I can't even bear to think about what's going to be in the future. And I sit and think about all the dangerous, horrible things that could take place. That's called hirhur. And that's already, I bought the rug. But even if 100 times this rug salesman just doesn't get tired, I guess he doesn't have any other place to knock, and he just keeps knocking on my door and bringing them in, even if I refuse him 100 times, then I didn't buy the rug. It's still not mine. I am still that pure, good, holy individual that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves so dearly, even though he's testing me. And you know what? As many times he tests me, that just shows how much he loves me. He's giving me more and more opportunities to refuse to buy those rugs. No, I'm not buying them. And I'm still not interested in them, even though you've been trying to sell them to me for the last 3 days. And so resisting those negative kinds of thinking, we're going to get tremendous reward for that. The Kadosh Baruch Hu wants the heart. He wants our thoughts. And so if we refuse to buy those thoughts and instead think something else instead, then I'm giving my machshava up to Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Then I'm doing what I'm in this world to do. Then I'm training my mind how to live with faith and trust, how to live with hope and love. And we're going to be discussing the smorgasbord of positive, beautiful thoughts that is available for us to think, which the Yetzer Hara is so busy distracting us from thinking. And that's why he's so busy, because he wants to distract us from all of the positive, wonderful, life-giving, bounty-bringing kinds of thoughts that we could be engaging instead. So, let's talk a little bit more about thoughts and their place in a Yid's life. Rav Gifta was famous Rosh Yeshiva. And it said, this actually, his daughter, Rebbetzin Foya, she should live and be well, Bar Chaim Tovim, she shared this story in one of the, in the Think Positive program that she took with me many years ago. She said that they only heard this story actually during the Shiva. But when he was a young man and he was brought into Yeshiva and he found himself in his dorm room, he hung up a picture frame on the wall. And in the picture frame, there were 2 pictures of Gedolim with an empty space in the middle. And in the middle, he had written, "Why not you?" A message to himself. You can be here if you work hard. He understood, Rav Gifta understood, the power of his own imagination. That if he could imagine himself up there with the Gedolim, then he would be able to get there. The Rav Dessler brings down the altar of Kelm, Rav Simcha Zisel Broida, who says like this, who asks the question, how did the Avos and all of the Gedolim achieve their levels? How was their strength greater than ours? In fact, the woman just asked me this question in class the other day. What did they all know that we don't know? Like, what did they get that we are not getting? And he answers, they knew the tremendous power of Tziyurei Lev. They understood the power of these inner representations. The Yetzirah knows this secret, he says. So we need to learn to fight with his weapon, to increase the use of pictures of inner scenarios from the side of holiness. From whatever happens in the world, says Odessa, we can take live pictures to heal our spirits. We need to learn from everything, emuna and bitachon, through tziorim, through our inner representations within ourselves. These gedolim talk about pictures, but as I'm going to right away explain, not everybody's imagination uses pictures. And so some people might think, but I'm not imaginative. I don't know how to use my imagination. And that's not true. Everybody has an imagination, and everybody uses it. And I'll prove it to you right now. I'm not going to ask you to do this now, but if I would ask you to frighten yourself, how long would it take you? Probably you could frighten yourself within, 10 seconds. Because we all know how to frighten ourselves. Our imagination does a very good job. Whether it does it in pictures, whether it does it in sounds, whether it does it in just a feeling within our heart, our imagination creates fear very, very rapidly and very effectively. And so our job, meaning that's the Yetzirah, is able to create fear when there's nothing to be afraid of. So our job is to learn our own tziorim, our own inner representation, to understand what is my brain presently feeding me? What are my inner preconditions, my pre-perceptions about the world and about me, about my relationships, about my life, so that I can then begin to question them. I can begin to create new neuropathways in my brain, which will actually create new pathways in my life for myself and for my family. Rabbi Cheska Levenstein said, before that, and many other, Revolvi, many other people bring this, and it comes from a much earlier source in Kabbalah, that when we say, when we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, we are supposed to think about actually what took place. We're supposed to imagine it in order to create those feelings. When we, before we say Shema, and we say V'kerev Tanu Malkeinu, that you drew us close, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are supposed to think in our minds and picture all of Klal Yisrael and ourselves amongst them standing around Har Sinai in order to arouse ourselves to deep feelings of connectedness, readiness to accept Al Malchus Shemayim. The Mishneh Brura, the Chofetz Chaim, writes a halacha before davening Shmona Esrei. A person is supposed to imagine themselves in the Beis HaMikdash. These are the words of the Chofetz Chaim. He should think in his heart and in his imagination, Keilu hu oimed b'mikdash, asher b'Yerushalayim, b'makayim kodesh kadoshim, as if he is standing in the Beis HaMikdash, in Yerushalayim, in the Holy of Holies. Now, most of Klal Yisrael will never be allowed to enter the Holy of Holies. Yet, you and I and all of Klal Yisrael are instructed by the Chofetz Chaim in the Mishneh Brura. Before we daven Shmona Esrei, we should imagine that we're there. We're encouraged to imagine something that will never, ever happen. That's very interesting, isn't it? We're encouraged to imagine something that will never happen in order to arouse feelings, because the feelings are so important. So this is a very important piece of information for us. We're allowed, not only are we allowed, we're instructed to use our main imagination. Because even if we're imagining something that absolutely won't happen, but the feelings that can be aroused from imagining such a scenario are worth it. Rav Carmel explains, this is Rav Avram Chaim Carmel, actually his father, Rav Arya Carmel. Rav Arya Carmel was one of the main Talmidim of Rav Dessler. And Rav Arya Carmel, the father of Avram Chaim, who I frequently have spoken, ideas out with, but Rav Arya Carmel said, one should imagine himself alone in a huge hall, 40 feet high, five stories high and 40 feet wide, and before him is the Arayin and the Keruvim. And this vivid picture will put us in a state of awe appropriate for tefillah. This is what we're supposed to be doing with our mind. There is actually a guided imagery track that goes with the entire tefillah. because it doesn't actually exist in present, but it exists in the intentions and the thoughts that we're supposed to be having as we daven. Tefillah is called avodah shebelev. It is service of the heart. And again, as the Beis Aaron says, that means service of the thoughts. It is about our thought processes. In the Chavos HaLevavos, he brings that initially, when they structured tefillah, the intention was that we should go from this thinking to that thinking and think about this and then think about that. And so they structured the words of tefillah to guide us to thinking different kinds of things. The purpose is for the machshava, the purpose is for the thoughts that we're supposed to have as we daven. That's what's called avodah shebelev. It's a service of the thoughts. So we need to use our minds. A yid needs to understand how to control their thinking. We are not davening efficiently and properly if we're not guiding our minds to where we're supposed to be. An amazing piece of instruction comes from Osher Stalin, the father of the Beis Aaron. He says that what we should do when we daven is, he says, when a person exerts himself in tefillah, in simcha in tefillah, to feel happiness in davening, to feel emunah in davening, to feel yiras shamayim in davening, then all of these serve as a kind of time release capsule, that whatever he has put into his davening will release itself throughout the day in his experience. Whoever davens with simcha, he will get simcha throughout the day. Whoever doesn't daven with simcha, he says, has to come up with all kinds of tricks and shtickim to try and help him to stay happy throughout the day. But if he guides his mind in davening, and again, when I say guide his mind, it means just a second of simcha, a second of belief. A second is all it takes. It doesn't have to take a long time. It doesn't mean hours of deep concentration. It means think for a second of the simcha of being a yid. Think for a second that Hashem is here for me. Think for a second that Hashem loves me and that He's in control of the world. You thought those things? You have now created a time-release capsule that all throughout the day is going to give you the benefit of those thoughts that you managed to have during davening. So learning how to guide our minds, it's not just a nice extra in Yiddishkeit. It is absolutely part of the fundamentals of what we need in order to live a full Jewish life. And it makes a difference. It's also going to turn things around. It's also going to change our lives. It's going to make a major difference to everything that's going on. One beautiful story that I'll just share with you about how when we use our imagination in different kinds of ways, it actually changes our experiences. One very dear participant who's been with me a number of times shared this story that she had a daughter who had been in Shidduchim for a number of years, and she really was hoping and wanted this daughter to get married. And so I worked together with her trying to create those inner scenarios that would help her to feel trust, that would help her to feel confidence and emun and bitachon in Hashem, that Be'ez Hashem, the day was coming soon that she would be getting married. And we created some inner scenarios that helped her a lot. And one day she was talking to her son, a very shtarky yeshiva bacher, and he was saying that he was davening for his sister every day. And so the mother saw it was a good time to open up the subject. And she said to him, you know, from what I've been learning, it's also good to use our imagination to help ourselves to really feel trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam and to be able to look forward with tzipia, with hope, to that moment. Maybe you can help try and imagine your dear sister under the chuppah. So he tried to think about it, but he told his mother later on that it was really hard for him to imagine his sister under the chuppah. But that evening, as he was walking home from yeshiva back to his dorm, it was raining, and he took cover under a shelter. And as he was taking cover under the shelter and he looked at his phone, he thought to himself, you know, I could imagine my sister, Rivki, calling me and telling me, Yanki, I'm engaged. That he could imagine. And so he looked at his phone and he thought that he could imagine that the phone is ringing and Rivki is telling him, Yanki, I'm engaged. So that's with that thought, he went back to yeshiva. Okay. I don't remember whether it was weeks or months later. He was walking home from dorm to yeshiva or from yeshiva to dorm. And it was a rainy afternoon. And he took shelter under that very same place where we had taken shelter that day. And all of a sudden the phone rang. And who was it? It was Rivki on the line. "Yankee," she gushes, "I'm engaged." Yankee's brain starts firing off as he's trying to gather all this information. Here, the rain, under this shelter, Rivki is engaged. And he told his mother, "I'm a believer." Okay, I see that it works. Baruch Hashem and Hodeh Hashem ki tov. Now, did he make it happen? Of course he didn't make it happen. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his love for us, shows us how much he appreciates our thoughts. He shows us how much he is aware of our efforts to come close to him and to believe in him and to trust in him and to hope to him. And so, since this young man had made an effort to think a thought of emunah and bitachon, to think a thought that aroused within him tzipiyah liYeshua, hoping to Hashem, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him that Yishuk Koyach and allowed him to hear that news in that way at that time, in order that he would get the encouragement to understand that he'd done good and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was pleased. I want to end today, and then we'll open up for questions, with a beautiful piece. And this is one of my all-time favorite sources. It gives me a tremendous amount of encouragement. And really, for me, this was a life-changing discovery when I discovered this quote. And really, I just want to share personally that for me, when I see and when I learn a piece of Torah that affects my life, and it transforms the way that I view things, it transforms the way that I think within myself, I find that that's something that needs to be shared. And that's why I embarked on this journey, because I found that there were so many life-changing pieces of Torah available that people that I knew just didn't know, and I didn't know. And even if we knew them, but we didn't realize that they were actually meant to be applied, we think, oh, that's just for big tzaddikim, and that's not for normal, average yidden like me. But it's not true. It's applicable for every single Jew, no matter where he is. We are all beloved children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we are all gifted with a neshama elokis, with a piece of HaKadosh Baruch Hu within us. And that neshama, that godly soul that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has breathed into us, is put down into this world to activate the incredible powers that they should come down. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in a relationship with us, and he is placing us here. We're the messengers down here to then bring down, we're like the satellite, and then all of the good can come down through Klal Yisrael. So this is one of those sources, right, that deserves such an introduction to, and way more of an introduction than I could possibly give it, that really can change our lives if we allow ourselves to take it in. This is from the Sefer Mevakesh Emunah, which is written by the first Toldos Aharon Rebbe. And Rav Yecheskel Levenstein, when he would speak about emunah and bitachon, he frequently quoted this sefer. This is one of his favorite sources to quote. So just to understand what it is that we're reading. So he says like this. It's known from many of the Sfarim, many of the holy books that were written by the students of the Baal Shem Tov, that they brought down in his name, in the name of the Baal Shem Tov. And again, he brought it down, but the Baal Shem Tov was also quoting earlier sources. He didn't make this up. That every person in any place, wherever he thinks, that is where he actually is. He goes to where his thoughts are. Whatever he's thinking about, that's where he transports himself. He transports himself to actually the location of what he's thinking about. And so it is that when a person, when a Yid, thinks about the Geula, when he thinks about the ultimate Geula that Hashem has promised us that he's going to bring, that we daven for every day, that we wait for daily, u'mitzapa liYeshua, and when this Yid is anticipating Yeshua's Hashem, niskasha nashay bezeh, his soul becomes bound up with the Geula. Okay, let's just get this step by step through. Whenever we think about the Geula, even just 1 second of thinking about the Geula creates an attachment of our soul to the Geula. U'mamshich al yedei zeh, al nafshei Geula pratis. And through that deep connection that he's now created with that thought, He draws to himself, upon his spirit, a personal geula. If any of us need a personal geula, if we have any personal challenges that we need, and as an individual, then he's telling us how we can actually draw to ourselves that kind of Yeshua with a thought of the geula. Sometimes when we read spiritual truths, they seem so simplistic that they can't be true. What you mean? I don't have to work an entire life? I don't have to contact every single Afghan that I know in order to get the Yeshua? Its simplicity is distracting, and it makes us almost want to not believe it. And that's why when we live in this material world, our physical eyes blind us, our physical ears deafen us, our physical body numbs us to the spiritual truths that are simple. Spiritual truths are extremely simple, but because they're so simple, our sophisticated minds don't want to grasp them and don't want to hold on to them with any kind of strength. But this is the truth. And it's so beautiful and so simple. And that's why it is so hidden in the world. But this is the truth of who we are and what we can do. When we think for a second about the Geula, we attach our souls to the ultimate Geula. But through that, we begin to draw even now all of the Yeshuas that we need right now to ourselves. And that's why when we say in Shmona Esrei, the bracha of Es Tzemach David, we ask Hashem to allow the Malchus Beis David to sprout. It says in that blessing in Shmona Esrei, in the Amida prayer, Ki Yeshuascha Kividu Kol Hayom. We hope for your salvation all day. What does this mean? This means that we need actually all day to wait. This is a mitzvah to midis. This, and I'm just reading straight, I'm just translating straight from the text. I'm not adding anything. I'll read to you, I'll read you the text because I want you to really understand that I'm not adding anything from this, okay? Mashma, that means, shetzarich kol hayom mamish lechakot. That means that we have to wait all day, truly. Who mitzvah tadiris. This is a constant mitzvah. K'may achdus Hashem ve'emunas Hashem. Just like thinking about the oneness of Hashem or believing in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And it's written in some of the Sidurim, and it's actually brought down, I'm adding this phrase I'm adding in, that it's actually written, brought down in one of the Meforshim of the Shulchan Aruch on Tefillah. And I'm going back to the original text here. Shetzarich lechavein. That when a person says these words, Lishu'ascha kivinu kol hayom, we hope for your salvation all day. That we have to have kavana, we have to have intention, we have to think in our minds. Lechakais lechol mine yeshuas, to wait for all different kinds of yeshuas. All of our personal yeshuas, whatever it is that we need now. We need money, we need to get married, we need a baby, we need health. Whatever it is that we need shalom bayis, we need peace of mind, we need to be able to sleep at night, whatever it is that we need. Here, lechakois, when we say those words, lishu'asa kivinu kol hayom, I have to have intention that Hashem, I'm waiting for this. I'm waiting for this to happen. Meaning that I'm looking forward to it happening and I'm waiting that you're going to send me whatever it is that I need. And it's a mitzvah the entire day to wait for Hashem to help. We know what it's like to wait for a phone call. You know what it's like. The phone call's going to come any minute now. I'm waiting for the vegetable delivery. I'm waiting. I know what it means to wait. He's going to come any minute. And in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, it's going to come soon. I'm busy with other things as I'm waiting, but I'm on alert in a good kind of a way because I know the vegetables are going to come. That's what it means here. I have to wait all day long. I have to have in mind, oh, soon it's going to come. Yeah, that Yeshua's going to come. Whatever it is that I'm hoping to Hashem for, it's on its way. I'm waiting for it. L'kol mina Yeshuas. V'hakavana shekeven shemamshichin or ha-Yeshua ha-atida. So the intention is like this. Since when I think about the Geul in that 1 second, I've attached my neshama to the actual reality of the Geula. And through that attachment, I've connected myself to it and begun to draw to myself the actual light of the ultimate Geula, where everything is going to be perfect, that light begins to come to me even now with my thought. My thought has attached me, and my thought has begun a process of drawing down incredible blessings into my life. And Nichlalim Memela, Kol HaYeshuas, all of the Yeshuas, whatever it is that I'm waiting for, all the Zivugim, all of the Shidduchim, all of the money, all of the refuahs, the healing that I need, all of the, any kind of salvation, whether I need friendship in my life, whether I need health in my life, whether I need a good job, whatever it is that I'm waiting for, all of the Yeshuas are included in that fantastic light that has started to come down through my thoughts. L'chein os ha'eis, that's why that is the time to have intention and to ask about all the other Yeshuas that we need. It is the time for us to remember, oh, whatever it is that I need. And so this is the first piece of homework that I want you to practice. We didn't even get into thinking about guided imagery right now. But we're learning how to guide our minds already a little bit. That if you have the time during the day to daven Shemona Esrei, when you get to the blessing of Es Tzemach David, and you say those words, Lishu'ascha kivinu kol hayom, have in mind, I'm waiting for money, I'm waiting for a zivug, I'm waiting for my friend to get back to me, I'm waiting to go out for the day, I really need a break. I'm waiting for the babysitter to get back to me, I'm waiting to go out for shopping, I'm waiting for the money, whatever it is, just take a minute, 5, 10, however long you want to stand there, and tell Hashem whatever you're waiting for. That's not called chutzpah, that's called a mitzvah to midis. It's called a constant mitzvah. Because let me ask you a question. If you're not hoping to Hashem for this, then you're hoping to somebody else. You're thinking that the job's going to come from the boss, or the money's going to come from the bank loan, or that your friend is going to come from who knows where. You think it's going to come from somewhere else, but when you take that time to focus and think, I'm waiting from you, Hashem, because you have everything, and you are the one that's bringing the ultimate Geula, and I'm connecting my mind to think about that, and knowing it's only coming from you, then I'm filling myself with the emuna in Hashem, emuna in Hashem's care for me, emuna in the ultimate geula. I'm doing so many things in that 1 second of thought and connection. And when I do that, I'm fulfilling one of the constant mitzvahs to hope to Hashem. And when I do that in the morning, this is also part of that time release capsule, that throughout the day, I'm going to find it that bit easier to wait for Hashem's salvation. I'm waiting. It might be a little bit hard to wait. It's hard to be patient when you ordered the vegetables yesterday, right? It's a little bit hard. I wanted it yesterday. I also want it today. But at the end of the Chafetz Chaim's life, when he was about to pass away and he realized that he'd spent his whole life waiting for Mashiach and Mashiach still hadn't come, did he say to himself, well, that was a wasted life. Why did I wait a whole life for Mashiach to come and he didn't come? Did he think like that? Did any Yid who passed away without having seen Mashiach think to himself, well, what a life wasted, I didn't get to see him? Nobody ever did that. And the answer is because we know inside ourselves that the life spent hoping to Hashem is actually the greatest way to spend a life. In most cases, we will be answered. That's true. We will be answered. But even if we're trying to wait for something that doesn't actually end up happening, but waiting in and of itself is a constant mitzvah. There's no downside to waiting. We might be fearful of being disappointed, and we're going to be talking about that in a further class. But allowing ourselves to wait, allowing ourselves to keep patiently holding on to a hope, is one of those things that's going to change our minds. It's one of those things that's going to transform our inner life. Because when we live with hope, then we live an entirely different kind of existence. It changes us from being a caterpillar who's crawling around, eating bits of leaves and not able to see further than the next piece of leaf, to transforming into a butterfly who's flying in the very same garden. But it's an entirely different life. That's the transformation that can take place within us, Be'ezus Hashem and B'siyata D'Shemayim. Okay. Be'ez Hashem, we've finished the material for today. And now I do want to encourage all the ladies on the line to one by one ask your question. There are, Baruch Hashem, a lot of you on the line. And so if you want to unmute yourself, you push *6. And whoever gets first, you get to ask your question first. We have 15 minutes for question and answer about anything that has come up during today's class, questions that you had. So please, anyone with a question, please push *6. And I look forward to meeting you. Hi.
Hi, it's Frances from New York. How are you?
Okay. Hi, Frances. Great to hear you on.
So I have a question about, you know, the whole thing of, let's say there's an impossible situation. Somebody has a terribly deteriorating critical health condition, which I know about right now in my life of somebody who's close to somebody I know. How do you know when there's hope versus you're really being kind of foolish to think there's hope and it's not even possible that there'll be a Yeshua? Like, where do you draw the line? How do you assess?
Okay, so this is actually a frequently asked question, of course. People need to know this kind of a thing. And the answer that I always give is that if it ever happened to anybody else, then we could also hope for it too. So anything that, if such a situation was even one time reversed, then we could hope that also in this situation too, that I could hope that it could be reversed. If somebody who's in a coma has ever woken up out of a coma, well, yes, we know that's happened. Then we can also hope that whoever, lo lin v'lo alechem, but somebody who's sitting there, we could hope that they could also come back to themselves as well. But if it never, ever happens, such as a Tay-Sachs child, lo lin v'lo alechem, somebody once brought his Tay-Sachs child to Rav Moshe Feinstein and asked him for a blessing. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says, if we can't give a blessing against nature, that would be asking for something beyond what even exists in a natural way. And so in that situation, I would say hope for something if it ever happened before. So even if something is a degenerative disease, but the time span is not defined. So just as Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer lived an entire life with tuberculosis, even though that wasn't B'derech HaTeva, but he did have it, but he continued living a long life. So we could hope that even if it's degenerating, but Be'ez Hashem, it could stop at certain points, and who knows? Meaning, if it ever happened to somebody else, then I could hope, then I could ask that this could be changed for me too. Does that answer that, Frances?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. Yes, next question. Go ahead. You just muted yourself and then unmuted and then muted again and unmuted. If you want to ask a question, push *6. Looking forward to hearing next question, anyone? Yeah,
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Hi.
So I want to ask, like, sometimes it's good to make, like, an actual picture on a paper to help you out to imagine.
If you like to do that, then that's great. From next class, from Wednesday, we're going to be learning lots of very practical tools in how to help ourselves to navigate the pathways of our mind. And we're going to be using speech. We're going to be using our imagination. We're going to be using all kinds of different tools. If drawing something out works for you, then I think that's beautiful. And go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Yes. Okay, anybody else? In fact, if you want to spend the time, you know, in a dreamy kind of a way, painting or drawing your dreams, I think that's very beautiful. I think that's a very therapeutic, hopeful experience. Yeah, sounds good to me. Anybody else with a question, ladies? Even if you just want to introduce yourself or say hi, you know, love to hear from you. There's a beautiful, nice group on the line. Anybody else want to ask or say anything?
Am I still on?
Hi,
you're still on, yeah.
Yeah,
I just wanted to say from West Hartford, Connecticut.
Hi, Sandy. This is so special to have you on, all the way from Connecticut. So nice to be able to connect with you at this time. Thank you so much for saying hi.
And thank you for keep giving this course. It's life-changing.
You're so great. Thank you. I hope that we hope to hear you live many, many times, Sandy, okay?
Okay.
If you have, like, a wrong picture in your mind of something, how long does it take for you to change the way you think?
It can be done within 5 minutes. Okay? It really, I'm honestly serious. It can be done within 5 minutes. Actually, it could be done really even less, but I'm giving you a generous time frame here. Once we learn how to picture, how to create inner scenarios of something, and we do it within the structure that I'm going to be teaching, Be'ezrat Hashem, then we can very elegantly and easily create new neuropathways in our brain. And once we have that there, once you create it, then we can just choose to go down that path instead of down the old one. And it's a beautiful new view. And so I really am serious in saying that it can really take as little as 5 minutes when we're motivated, when we actually do the work. But absolutely, we can create. That is the history of all the women that have ever taken this course. That's what they've learned to do. They've learned to create for themselves new pathways in the brain. And through, let me ask you, did you ever have the experience of going somewhere and hearing something new, and then all of a sudden it fired your imagination and you were able to think of something different than you hadn't thought of before?
Yeah.
Okay, so then you just did that for yourself. Something that you never thought of, you were able to create a new neuropathway in your brain based on information that someone told you. So you just did that for yourself. And it didn't even take 5 minutes to be able to think of a new possibility like that. So that's what we're going to do for ourselves. We don't have to struggle. We don't have to dig through all of the past history. But we simply, elegantly create for ourselves a new pathway. And then the old highway just sits there unused. And then it just loses, you know, it just loses its power after time. And Be'ezrat Hashem, we will be able to have a lot of fun doing it too. Want to tell me your name?
Malkatsevi Gross.
Say again?
Malkatsevi Gross.
Malkatsevi Gross. Great to meet you on the line. Okay. Thank you for introducing yourself. I look forward to speaking with you. Oh, so if nobody else wants to ask anything, I just wanted to say a very important point, and then we'll still have some more time if anybody has another question, and that is a major part of our journey together is going to be the personal time that we spend talking one-on-one, you and me, figuring out exactly what are your present pathways and what you would like your new pathway to be inside your mind. And that's how we can really tailor all of the tools that we're going to be sharing in a general way to your specific situation. Because it's not one size fits all. Everybody has a different mind, and I don't want you to try on somebody else's mind. I want you to learn how to use your own mind in the best possible way. So in order to get the best out of this program, I want you to be in touch with Devorah frequently, and appointments are made only by getting in touch with Devorah, either by email or by phone, and we'll schedule a time. Each session is a 20-minute slot where we'll be talking together about whatever's going on in your life and how to apply whatever tools we've learned to what's going on in your life. So even be in touch today, tomorrow, whenever you like, to schedule in an appointment so that we all get to have time together. Yes. Anybody else with something you'd like to ask or share?
Hi, it's Blimi Cohn from New York.
Tell me your first name again, please.
Blimi Cohn.
Blimi. Hi, Blimi. Great. Wonderful to hear from you.
I really enjoyed the session. I mean, just the first one was very impressive.
Great.
I have a question.
Yes.
Does this these sessions are actually going to teach you how to connect your mind to things that are coming up in life that you don't expect, or just past things, how to change your mindset and how to accept it positively?
100%. It's going to help us to deal with the past. It's going to help us to approach the future, both. 100% in both ways. We're going to learn how to carry the past in a way that is positive, and how to look forward to the future, even with all of the unexpected adventures that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending us. Yes, we're going to be learning very practical tools. It's an extremely practical course.
Thanks.
Okay, look forward to joining with you. Yes, next.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Janet, as is from Brooklyn.
Hi, Janet. How are you?
How are you?
This is so fun. Isn't this so fun? Old friends and new friends all coming together. This is very fun. Once you've spoken, just push star six. 1 second. Just push star six once you've spoken, because otherwise you're sharing your background noise with everybody. And we don't, you know, you can keep it to yourself right now. Push star six if you have spoken up already. Janet, how are you doing?
Oh, Hashem, I'm back in Brooklyn. And Israel is amazing. Can I share with you something sad that I felt like Hashem really blessed me with when I was in Israel?
Oh, yeah.
And it just really helped me feel like Hashem's love for me. And I was like thinking how you were telling me just trying to build up Hashem's love for you and hold on to something positive.
Yes.
Did you go to Rachel Imenu on your side?
Hey, beautiful. Great.
Did you go to Rachel Imenu on her your side?
Because I, Baruch Hashem, live around the corner from Rachel Imenu, and I basically pass Rachel Imenu every day. I go to Yerushalayim and back, and I say a prayer there. So I dafka don't go on the yard site. Yes, dafka don't go
right.
On the yard site.
So how many people were there, Kanai Nahara?
On the yard site, I'm sure there were thousands of people going. My daughter-in-law went. She went on the yard site, and she said you were only allowed to stand next, actually inside about 1 minute, and then they moved you on.
Exactly.
So there were so many people
there.
So
using
there,
my tools, the Chasei Hashem, I was able to sit down in the kever of Rachel Imenu for 3 hours on the yard site.
Wow. Okay, good for you. She is Kavlu Kol HaTfilot. All the tefillot should be answered.
They pushed me away within a minute. And then I said, can I sit in this room? And they said, no, I didn't even finish praying the names of my family. And I said, can I just finish that? They said, no, the Chayalot pushed me away. And then I said, can I go in this room? And they're like, no, absolutely not, unless if someone has a handicap, no. I said, thank God I'm not, Baruch Hashem, I'm healthy. And then, and that's the way, who gives those notes? I went to the front, the lady, I don't know what I said to her. She tells me, Martek! She takes me into the room, she sits me down, she sat with me, she said, you're sitting right here. She tells me, pray for my son, pray for this, pray for that. The lady that works in Rachel Imenu Kever, that's in charge. I don't know why. I said, Hashem, with your help, I have the angels, Michael, Gabriel. I said, with your help, I'll stay here for 3 hours. And I'm just like afraid the whole time they might throw me out because they're throwing out other people. I said, no, you're Hashem's daughter. Hashem's love is doing. You're going to sit here the whole time till you're ready to leave, till 6 o'clock, till my husband's ready. He said, we made the time from 3 to 6. I kept saying, what am I going to do from 3 to 6? They're going to throw me out. I said, no, Hashem's help. I'm sitting here, and I'm picking myself up like a lady when I am ready. This is exactly what happened. Hakol Amaram and Hatava. It was amazing. The
beautiful.
Whole trip was like that. But I just had to share that, and that's like, no, that's zero detail. It was just phenomenal.
Beautiful.
Really, I was trying to think, what are my tools? And
beautiful.
And when I picked up on anticipation, this is Shulat Hashem, it was amazing. And you know it's beyond Teva because they didn't let you stay for 1 minute.
Right.
I just want to share
very
with the ladies
special.
That the program really works in fabulous ways. Thank you. I love
very
it.
Very nice. Beautiful. Thank you for speaking up. It's so great to be
thank
together
you.
With everybody on the line. It's like
totally.
It's like a virtual, we're sitting around a virtual coffee table, ladies, okay? So make sure to bring your cup of coffee or tea with you next time. And
I did.
good for you.
Literally. Thank you so much. I love you.
Anybody else with a question you would like to present before we finish today, ladies? So I have just a couple of minutes. Anybody would like to ask anything or share anything before we end for today?
Hello, Kahinda.
Yes, hi.
Yes, Esther, it was wonderful to hear first time, but hearing something else. It's completely something else when you hear it the third time.
Great. Baruch Hashem. Good. I'm so happy to hear you,
thank
Anas.
You.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for speaking up. Okay, ladies, if there's anybody else you'd like to ask a question before we finish, or we'll finish now. We'll meet again on Wednesday, Mi'at Hashem.
Hi, Hinda.
Okay, so we'll... Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to say thank you so much, and it's like Trias HaMesim, seriously.
Yiddish, it's so good to hear your voice, so special. Thank you so much for speaking up.
Hi, I just wanted to thank you and Devorah so much for everything, for all your devotion and everything, all these I don't know, it's been years already. I mean, it's like every time I listen, it's like the first time. It's so amazing. It's amazing. It gives me breath, and it like, I don't know. I just feel like so refreshed. It's unbelievable. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Be'ez Hashem, Nasev and Atzliach, Kosh Baruch will give us the kayach to join together for good things always. Thank you so much. So special to you from all the old friends and the new friends. Be'ez Hashem, we're going to have a really fun journey together. Look forward to spending a lot of time getting to know you all on this journey that we're taking with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, with Siyata Deshmaya. Thank you so much for joining me. Look forward to speaking with you over the week, and we'll meet again on Wednesday in Mi'atzah Hashem. Bye-bye.